This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm AB, and this week that means Aaron's back, baby. ABB, maybe? I don't know. Something like that. I'm here. I'm back. I'm also joined, of course, by Mike. What's up, Mike?
Hey, y'all, it's your old pal, Aaron Mike Spears. I'm doing all right. You know, before we got going, I was having a lot of Pudge moments today during the show. But, you know, everything else here is going pretty well. Got a new fancy boom arm that I'm very excited about that I spent approximately 5 minutes with Aaron as he was trying to do something else as I was trying to adjust it to make it sound all right. But I'm doing okay. How are you now, Aaron, now that you're back into the thick of things? You've escaped the Sea Org, and now you're back amongst the living.
I'm okay. This is my third podcast of the day, which I don't enjoy. I'm not happy about, but I'm happy to be here. I missed doing the show last week. I went a little crazy on light this morning because I missed the show so much. I got a new tattoo, and it's they do this gimmick now where they just like wrap it. You just put it in this shit for like 5 days, and it looks insane. It feels insane, and I hate that. So that's pretty much it. But
this is like the replacement for A&D. Instead of using like A&D or other sort of stuff, now they have like a sleeve you put on after for aftercare.
So you clean it, you let it dry. Okay. Completely. You don't put anything over it. And then you do this stuff that's like, it's for wound care, where you just, they're like little plastic sheets that like stick to your skin. And you just leave them on there for 5 days. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Fair enough. Sorry. Just point of information there.
Sure. Nate is also here, aka Epitasis. How are you, Nate?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm a little annoyed, first of all, that we're not getting Grumpy Aaron. I was promised Grumpy Aaron on today's AEW Light, and you're clearly not very grumpy. So I think that's false advertising. I think the fans have gotten used to Aaron being in a state of, what's a semi-diplomatic word to use here, disgruntledness. And I think you're letting everybody down by being in a good mood.
I don't know what happened. It's been an awful day. I think I can trace it, actually. So work has been insane lately. And so that's led me to basically having to work all day today when I wasn't podcasting. And I don't like working on the weekend, frankly. I don't like working in the evenings, which I have been. But, friends, after I got done working and did my second podcast, I took a little walk to a little place down the street called Dairy Castle. And I got some ice cream. Dairy Castle with a K. And it's this amazing place that's, you know, like, I don't know, half a mile from my house. And they have like the biggest menu you could possibly imagine. And what I got was what they call a flurry, which is like, you know, a mech flurry or a, what does Dairy Queen call them?
Blizzard.
A blizzard. And it is so good. And that, I think, really turned my day around.
Well, that will do it. A knockoff blizzard will cure what ails you. Now, I'm guessing by the branding here, by the name mark, that this place was at one time called Dairy King, and then were forced to change it by the Dairy Queen Corporation. So they went with Dairy Castle, but with a K. So they're really coming as close to infringing on that trademark as possible.
Well, I will say I posted a picture on my Instagram story that I was at Dairy Castle, and a friend of mine who went to high school in Louisville, who is about the same age as me, said that she used to go to Dairy Castle, go to there from her high school. So I think it's been called Dairy Castle for at least the past 20 years. That doesn't mean they weren't originally called something else, of course.
No, but yeah, the king, the K makes me, why else have a K?
Yeah.
Are we not going to roast Aaron for calling it a McFlurry?
I don't know where that came from, honestly. When it came out of my mouth.
I didn't notice.
I was skeptical of having said it, but yeah.
I was more focused on, I was thinking about whether I wanted to split the hair of how similar a McFlurry and a Blizzard really are. I think there's a pretty significant difference.
There is.
There's a huge difference. I was
going to leave it alone.
But now we're here. This product is much closer to a Blizzard. I want to be very clear about that.
Good.
But they call it a Flurry.
Yeah, okay.
So I just, you know, I had to at least recognize that it's close to the McFlurry branding.
Yeah, I mean, you're never actually getting excited for a McFlurry. You're kind of like, well, I can't get a Blizzard here at McDonald's, but I can get something approximating ice cream. And then you have it, and then you're like, that wasn't worth it at all.
No. Yeah. Literally, the only time I would get a McFlurry is if Dairy Queen is closed, there's no Dairy Queen around. It's like, you're like, well, fuck, I guess if I can't literally, there's no way for me to go to a Dairy Queen, I will get a McFlurry. But this Flurry at the Dairy Castle is just as good as a Blizzard, honestly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
That's exciting.
It turned my day around a little, and then this episode of Dynamite didn't piss me off as much as I felt pissed off. I think these, like, Friday Dynamites...
I might even call it a good episode of Dynamite. I don't know if I'm, out on a limb there, going crazy.
No, I think it was good. I think it was good. But these Friday Dynamites have really pissed me off. I mean, they've been bad, and I wasn't excited about having to watch the show on a Saturday night, to be honest. And but it came through, so I'm in a better mood than I have any right to be.
So. How is everybody's Bosch watching coming?
I haven't had a chance to watch any yet.
Yeah. Mike? I mean, I just got an Xbox Series X, so...
Congratulations.
Yeah. I was able to get one somehow without paying anyone for a finder's fee with it. So I've been caught up with that lately. You know how long it takes to download 2 terabytes worth of games from Game Pass?
I do, because I do download games more than I play them.
Right, yes.
Although I have to say, so I when I got my Series X, I was upgrading from the free Xbox X that I won from Taco Bell.
Yeah.
And they did some magic where I literally just unplugged one, not even from the wall. I unplugged one from the power cord. They used the same power cord.
Yeah.
So I just plugged in the old power cord, plugged in the old HDMI cable, and then I logged in. And then I don't know how they did it, but it felt like everything was on there and ready to play within moments. It was an amazing, amazing technological feat by the good people in my company.
Well, congratulations. Good for you. I have not owned an Xbox since the 360, so I had a lot of work to do. And then you get to go see your game score and everything. So, like, if you're someone like me who just sat out, like, I was not touching the Xbone whatsoever. But the Xbox Series X, I was like, you know what? Game Pass makes sense for me. I went back and, like, looked at, like, the games I was playing, like, in 2007 and 2008. And I'm like, all right. Really was into Army of One for a little bit. Don't know why. Not a good game, but I got 300 gamer score out of it. So there I go.
Yeah, that was a trip down memory lane. I was like, wow, I played a Tiger Woods PGA golf game for 40 hours in, 2008. That doesn't sound like me, but sure.
Mike, I hate to blow up your spot here, but when you posted about buying the Series X, I first of all had no clue what it was, and I Googled it, and it looks very expensive. I'm just curious of how you were able to come across one for, and unless you paid some insane price for it.
No, there are Twitter accounts that track the...
Oh, this is like the Wario account, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And I was able to catch one on the right day, and I was able to get into my cart. And I was, to be completely honest, I was expecting not to get it, and I was expecting to get refunded, but it showed up at my doorstep 2 days ago. So there I go. Sorry.
I do think the people at Hard Drive Mag stole my Wario 64 joke. I don't know if you saw that one. You know, I do these fantastic jokes, probably like the best shit on Twitter, and they get like 8 faves or whatever. And then Hard Drive Mag or some big account will post the same thing like a week later and get like 62,000 faves. This is an ongoing problem. Been going on 10 years at this point. But it was that we needed a Wario 64 for vaccines. Because he had
I do remember that tweet.
And then Hard Drive Mag did a story literally like 2 days later that was like the exact same thing. Anyway, that's a story about a tweet that I did.
It's not really a story.
New season of Bosch, pretty good.
Yeah. How far into it are you?
I think 4 episodes.
Okay.
The Bosch and Maddie scenes are like worse than ever. But I enjoy their badness, like when they have their stupid, heartfelt conversations on the gorgeous, overlook of Los Angeles. Just unbelievably dumb, but I like it.
I was going to say, are you prepared for the IMDb TV spinoff that's just made so they could have less people there and, non-union?
Yeah, no, I'm not happy about that. IMDb, the branding, maybe the only branding in terms of streaming service that's worse than Amazon Prime.
Like it's owned by the same people.
Yeah. Amazon Prime already feels like, you're watching on fucking Walmart TV or something. IMDb is whatever is sub Walmart. Farm and Fleet TV.
I gotta say, I'm pretty excited for this new show about Bosch starring all the people from Bosch. It sounds good to me.
No, but well, okay. First of all, you're canceled because it's all a scheme to get out of paying union wages to people.
Yeah, I have heard that. That sucks.
So you are canceled for that.
Yeah.
And also, I'm pretty sure IMDb TV, you can't just pay for it and watch it. You have to watch it for free with fucking ads, which is hell.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's miserable.
They're ruining Bosch, and Jeff Bezos should be, put in the stocks for this crime.
Yes. I've been to Street
Fight
shows.
Mostly this crime.
Right. I've been to Street Fight shows, and I thought Kill Jeff Bezos was going a little far, frankly. But this, no, I draw the line here.
Yeah, it's not right. It's fucked up. I expect better of Bosch. I expect better of Maddie. I expect better of J. Edgar.
Chandler? Money Chandler
has a hot storyline this year.
Does she?
Yeah, that's probably the thing I'm most interested in at the moment. So if you're, Aaron, if you're enjoy the defense attorney's perspective side of things, it's finally starting to come around and pay off this season.
You could say I'm a money mark.
Hey, I think I will.
Thank you. All right. If you want to know more about our thoughts on Bosch, you can follow us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji. Hey, subscribe to the podcast. You just type in Everything Elite, whatever podcast app you use. Hit subscribe. It's real easy. If it's the Apple Podcast app that you use, give us a 5-star rating and review. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do so, of course, is to go to patreon.com/everythingelite. Shout out to all the patrons who are listening live right now. And you could do that every week if you go to Patreon, subscribe to the right tier, of course. All right, we'll kick this off. As is customary, I miss doing this. I mean, I didn't miss it at the time, but now that I'm doing it again, I miss it. So it's time for Elite or Delete. It is the part of the show where we talk about what we liked and didn't like from the show. Also, that's what we do the rest of the show. Nate, you're up first. What was your favorite part, your Elite pick from this week?
So yeah, pretty strong episode, I thought. Really no... we'll find things to delete. But in terms of the in-ring, I was pretty much enjoying all of it. I will give my Elite selection to the main event, I think, because it most exceeded my expectations. I knew this was going to be a challenge from Jungle Boy where he's valiant and he does his best and he's a plucky babyface and he gets a couple hope spots in there. But comes up short and isn't able to beat Kenny Omega. And maybe there's some hijinks with, the Good Brothers and all these other guys. But I really thought the crowd especially enhanced and heightened this match to a level where I got much more into it than I was expecting to. Very good crowd overall on this show, I thought. A total stark contrast to that episode a few weeks ago where Andrade debuted and everything just had a weird fucking vibe and energy the whole night. None of that on this show whatsoever. Crowd was on top of shit. They were hot for shit. The basically the first, I don't know, half of this match was Kenny doing pretty plain heat on Jungle Boy. He was not doing a lot of exceptional heat spots. There was nothing where you were really like, oh yeah, now that was some great action. But the crowd carried the whole first part of this match, I thought, where Kenny was beating him down and then Jungle Boy was just getting his little hope spots. And every time he did, the crowd fired up and they were so behind Jungle Boy and they popped instantly for his moves. And it really made it feel like a big world title match where something meaningful was on the line and they wanted their guy to win. And that was just so novel to me in, you know, Major League American Pro Wrestling. And then as it got into later part of the match, it really started to pick up. They had, you know, a whole bevy of moves and spots and ideas to go through. Jungle Boy had two different counters to the One Winged Angel, which, you know, I think meets that little test for a match like this, where is there a moment when you think, oh my God, there, you know, Jungle Boy actually is going to win this. And I don't know if I ever really thought that, but I did. I guess the standard I would apply is a reasonable person could watch this match and think, oh, Jungle Boy might win this. So that was exciting. I enjoyed the match. I like Jungle Boy. The crowd obviously loves Jungle Boy. They went crazy for the snare trap move, which is funny to me. He's over and this was hot, and it was a really solid, you know, big title challenge for him. And I think next time they go to this, Jungle Boy's got to start being in the position where he starts winning these big matches.
Yeah, the big thing that got me in this match, and this is when it clicked from being a very good match to being a great main event and great title match, was when in the first snare trap, I don't know if you caught this, Nate, but out in like the back from where they had the camera set up for it, you could see Jungle Boy's family freaking out that he locked in the snare trap. And at that moment, I was like, all right, they did their job here. Like, the big thing was to get the crowd to buy into Jungle Boy having just a remote chance of winning this match, and they did so. And I thought that the work in this match was great. This really reminded me of one of my favorite match types, and that is the touring champion meets the local up and comer. And that's what this one had that vibe of. And Jungle Boy, it's interesting. We were talking about this in the Discord. For a guy at his point of his career and through his AEW tenure, you would suspect that his stronger performances would be in tag or trios matches where, like, he's just not left all by his lonesome there. But no, he's really put together like this great catalog of singles matches now. And this is just another one on that list here. And as you said, Nate, like, the next time he's in these positions, like, now we are going like, okay, is Jungle Boy going to actually get strapped up here? Because it's clear now that he has his deficiencies, but they've shown a willingness to work around that. But it's clear now that he's, when we talk about like the big prospects, it's when they started the promotion in January 2019, it was big about MJF. It was big about Darby Allin. It was big about Britt Baker. It was big about Jungle Boy. Like, he made his step tonight, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they follow up with this, because that everything that they set out to do in this match, they accomplished. Now it's just what the follow through is. And that's what I feel like is kind of like the fun thing about when you watch like these like younger wrestlers, is seeing like them progress and seeing like each time there's like a new task or like a new test to see if they succeed or fail. But this time it was unmitigated success, and this match absolutely was the best thing on the show tonight.
What's funny is I think this is a match longtime listeners might expect me to come on and bitch about, because Jungle Boy pushed Omega, you know, to the edge, even though he's Jungle Boy and he's never beaten anybody. And I think the difference in this particular case is that Kenny Omega isn't the best bout machine in AEW. And this run as champion has not been about putting on these big time matches and, you know, destroying all the biggest people. He's gotten by on hijinks and largely on interference, and he has snuck through by the skin of his teeth in basically every match. So I thought it made sense here for a guy like Jungle Boy, especially when they told the classic story of getting all his buddies out of there at the beginning of the match. He's just got to go one-on-one with Jungle Boy, and he had a tough time with him. So I think that worked out, and the story made sense. I agree that it almost worries me how much the crowd liked Jungle Boy, because it's like, oh, you've got to go with this guy now. Like, it's time to actually elevate this this guy into a real guy, a real player in your promotion. And I hope that they will pull the trigger sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I wonder where that lane is for him at this point. Like Mike said, it's not like he's been, you know, anchoring a bunch of tag matches with his unit. So it doesn't seem like they're going to go, you know, Jungle Boy winning the tag team titles with Luchasaurus or whatever. But the, you know, world title and TNT title picture are very crowded with over guys who all seem like they, you know, should or need to have some run with one of those belts. So I kind of wonder what your next way to elevate Jungle Boy is without, you know, letting him languish on the back burner for too long.
Yeah, because you haven't made the TNT title that thing, right? Like, it's established as a top title. Miro is a top guy. So you can't really do that. You're right about the tag titles. So I don't know. That'll be interesting because they do have guys like Darby, like Jungle Boy, like MJF and Sammy, that they got to figure out a way to make them important, even though it doesn't seem like they're the guys who are going to be winning these titles right now.
Yeah,
right,
I'm,
oh, I'm sorry.
Raw was talking about Jungle Boy needs to go to Mexico and get some character as the, you know, hot heartthrob, and come back with a refreshed gimmick or something. I would almost pitch maybe you have Kenny lose the top title to somebody else, and then you have him drop one of his other two titles to Jungle Boy. You probably don't want to do it the AAA title because presumably he's going to lose that to you know, somebody in AAA. I wonder if you can get away with having him drop the Impact title to Jungle Boy, and then Jungle Boy can, you know, eventually lose it to somebody on Impact.
What about the real TNA World Heavyweight Championship?
That would be good. Well, actually, I don't know. I wonder if the stink would come with it.
I think that's part and parcel at this point.
The great thing, though, about later having to lose either title is no one would have any idea that it happened. So if you just never mentioned it on AEW before.
Right.
I mean, the plus side is that they could do a title switch to Jungle Boy with the AAA Mega Championship. AAA would probably be like, fine, that sounds great. When are you getting the title back and losing it to the guy? That works for us. So, I mean, they could. They could pull a Inoki Backlund if they really wanted to.
All right, what was your favorite thing from this show? I mean, it sounds like this match might have been your favorite thing, but hit me with your next most elite pick.
Well, there's a lot of stuff on this show that I had a great time with. Like, this was now that it's fresh TV, it's not pieced together from a taping from weeks before. I think the thing that I really enjoyed in this, and just like this one like instance, was Tully and Conan. I felt like that Conan coming in, there's way too many, there's an abundance of managers in this promotion, and adding in Conan, you know, that's just adding more to the pot. But Conan provided like a great promo in this thing, and a nice like counterpoint to what FTR was doing in their promos that they had last week. And I mean, hey, Conan, the one person who is bold enough to bring up mass incarceration of people of color on national television in a wrestling show, and getting like a babyface response for it, like, it worked with this. And then like they had a real effective like bait and switch beatdown on him. And I mean, I'm surprised that he took the Shatter Machine, you know. Or is that, well, is this the one that they stole the move from Raku, the Goodnight Express?
Yes, I think this is now the Goodnight Express.
Well, it's
no,
not the Goodnight.
It's now the Big Rig. They named it after Brody.
Oh, that's
now.
Right.
I thought the Big Rig is what they called the Shatter Machine.
The Shatter Machine, yes, this was none of those. The Shatter Machine became the Goodnight Express, and then they immediately changed it to the Big Rig.
Because they had to respect Raku.
Right, well, and then Brody.
And more importantly, Brody, but also Raku. But yeah, no, this segment was really well done, and like the bait and switch. Yeah, I mean, in AEW, there's been an abundance of like these beat down bait and switch kind of things here, but all the work leading up to it, and of course Conan bringing up the fact of, I thought that Conan like was uniquely pointed towards Tully, and I feel like it worked really well here.
Yeah, Conan killed it. I had no expectations for this at all. I was like, oh, fucking another FTR talk segment. It'll be, you know, cool to see Conan or whatever, but his relationship with Proud and Powerful is not really clear. So that's, you're kind of getting muddied waters on that front. But then Conan came out and just cut like a fucking awesome promo that the crowd reacted to big. He had just a ton of content. He really kind of crystallized the story I think they were trying to tell last week with this, like, oh, you know, FTR and Proud and Powerful were from two different environments, but we, you know, kind of have these similarities in how hard life has been or whatever. Conan, you know, came out and was like, fucking underlined it and put a period on and is like, here's what this means. Here's where, why Proud and Powerful, you know, knows this shit better than you guys. Here's why we're the fucking baby faces in this feud. And he fucking clowned all the other old guys in this promotion who can't cut a promo and keep your interest and do something exciting and, you know, pop you and all of those other things. He came out and he's like, no, here's what it looks like when a guy just fucking talks to another guy for 4 minutes straight and is interesting and exciting and gets you fired up about something. So I was like, hell yeah, love that. Love to see Conan now. Conan needs to get Vicky Guerrero out of this promotion. Conan needs to manage Andrade. Conan is the man. And then, yeah, the angle afterward, like, it was pretty obvious that it was FTR immediately upon them entering the arena and being on camera. But you kind of didn't care. It was like, yeah, okay, I see where they're going with this. But Tully did do the one good thing that he was going to do in this segment, which is after Conan got, you know, dropped on his head, did the big Conan booms. That was very amusing to me as a, you know, previous Conan podcast listener.
Yeah, I was, as you were, Nate, I was pretty skeptical of this happening, but it really took me back to, like, there's been times that I'm like, it's very funny that Conan was, like, one of my favorite wrestlers in the world in, like, 1998 or whatever. And listening to this promo reminded me exactly why that was, because I didn't give a shit about, like, who could do moves or whatever. What I cared about was he was really cool, and he talked in a way that was compelling to me, and that's all I cared about.
He did. His rolling clothesline was a cool move.
Oh, yeah.
So he did have that one good move. But, yeah, no, you look back, and Conan, you know, gave – Conan lent the Outsiders, like, all of the what's the good word to use here? You know, they were cool, but Conan was like, no, you're, like, young and urban and cool. And that all came from Conan.
Yeah, he was authentic.
Yes, and they –
in a way they were.
And to quote Dave Bixen's fan, they swaggerjacked Conan, but they made it work because, you know, they're big charismatic superstars also.
Yeah.
But without, yeah, Conan is what really afforded the NWO and especially the NW Wolfpack, like, that real contemporary coolness where it's like, no, this is of the time. This is today. This is modern and young.
Right.
This is not, you know, just old guys being big and whatever from the other.
Yeah, I was like, I was definitely, I mean, imagine what I looked like in 1998 in, like, Eastern Kentucky, and I was hitting the Viva La Raza, you know? I mean, it was just, it was real to me. It was very serious to me. So, yeah, but this was a reminder that the problem was at the end of this segment, I wanted to see Conan versus Tully. I mean, you know, and that's concerning a little. But
I don't want to see that.
I don't know. I mean, they're the people who seem to have the real issue. But I think you're right, Nate, that Conan was able to, I mean, he did say a lot of the same things that Santana and Ortiz have been saying, but he, like, made you feel it in a different way.
And that's exactly what I discussed last week, which is these teams all have good content for this promo that they're trying to set up, but you're not, the way that video package last week was edited together, you didn't feel any of it. It was all like, okay, I'm reading lines off a statute or whatever. Whereas Conan is like, no, I'm Conan and I'm real and I'm telling you the truth right
now. Nate, I was listening to The Game's, the documentary, the other day.
I did see you searching The Game and I was like, why is he doing that?
Well, I've been going through this top 250 hip-hop albums of all time list.
Oh, I was gonna say, it's not on the Rolling Stone list, is it?
No, I took a break after 250 Rolling Stone, and then I wanted to listen to some more hip-hop. And The Game is, like, toward the bottom of this list. Uh-huh. And all I could really think about while listening to it was your comment that FTR is The Game because of his repetitive lyrical content that was just, you know, name-dropping other rappers he wanted to be thought of like.
I think that's one of my best points ever made on this show.
It's my favorite for sure. I thought it was.
I bought that album. I liked that album. I liked the Kanye West song, and then the Why You Hate the Game, the Just Blaze epic. That's like a 12-minute song. Still listen to that from time to time.
It's. I mean, I've like Dreams, the Kanye produced song. I've always loved that song.
Yeah,
but the album. He really says the exact same shit on like every song.
Yeah.
Like every song, he talks about how he got shot and how he went into cardiac arrest and how he's bringing back NWA and he has to say
Dr. Dre.
50 Dr. Dre Eazy-E on every Eazy-E. Song. It's a tough listen, the whole album in 2021.
Yeah,
for sure.
No, you just need that one Just Blaze epic.
For sure. Okay.
I'm thinking of the wrong album. I'm thinking of the wrong album, aren't I? I was thinking of the documentary. The song is called Why You Hate the Game.
The documentary is the first one.
The Doctor's Advocate. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
He named his fucking album after Dr. Dre and had no Dr. Dre songs on the album.
Yeah, that's classic The Game for you there.
Classic The Game.
I think it's my turn now, right? My elite pick of this week is Miro as God's favorite champion. My main takeaway from last week's Dynamite was that Miro needed to do like a prosperity gospel gimmick where he just talks about why he's highly favored. And he was already starting to do that, but I wanted him to spread his wings a little with it and go a little crazier. And this promo on this episode of Dynamite was insane. It was so good. I mean, I think, Nate, you had the tweet of why doesn't he write Cody's promos. You're exactly right. He killed it. He started off with, thank you, God, for making me so powerful and my hot wife so flexible. I mean, how do you top that? So Mike and I were talking this morning. He's got to start coming out in the crazy. Well, I mean, Andrade's kind of doing this, so maybe he can't do it. But, you know, he's got to do the crazy fits where he just talks about how, you know, if people just believed in God more, they would be as successful as him. I think that would be a very successful heel gimmick for him. So I love it. Miro has been winning from day one and he continues to win.
Yeah. You know, his first gimmick and his first fits were good, and he's only gotten better and better dressed over time. The line that I excerpted on Twitter and just want to shout out again was, he said, standing between a man, a righteous man in his path is like standing between Cleaver and the meat, which is just a line so artful you never expect it from pro wrestling. That doesn't happen in the realm of professional wrestling. That was beautiful. And yeah, this reminded me of an old Mary J. Blige interview I read in probably Rolling Stone like 15 years ago, where the interviewer was like, oh, you know, you're so religious and you talk about God so much, and also like you are covered in diamonds from head to toe and all this shit, and Mary J. Blige was like, God wants me to shine. And that's Miro to me. God wants him to shine. I would never begrudge him all of his power or his outfits or his flexible wife. He is the man, and I love every segment that he is in and every segment that he has been in.
I think that at first I would like to thank Miro for giving us his testimony. You know, that was very nice of him talking about his walk with the Lord, you know, for our Lord and Savior. He's great. Like, well, just to further like hammer home the point, what we need is Miro needs to get 3-piece suits that are done in Gucci print. He's have a giant crucifix coming out and really just ape Danny McBride from The Righteous Gemstones. That's right. I found another angle to say a Jody Hill show is related to AEW. So, yeah, no, this rock. Miro's the best. Miro's number one.
I want to hear Miro do an I Love America promo. the problem is I don't know. Like, I guess he would be a heel while doing it, but I think I would come away with it going, Miro makes some good points. I kind of like America.
I mean, the one promo that we really need is we need him to do ATLians, This Is My Shit from Spring Breakers. Because I feel like that he could really put a nice spin on that if we just let him do a full line reading of that monologue.
And Jeff Jarrett should be there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's the MMA preacher. See, this all gets back together. It's all related to our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Our listener elite from this week comes from Alex Ron Johnston. I don't know if it's the three names, or if it's just because I spent a lot of time in Clearwater recently, but I always think about Scientology when I see Alex Ron Johnston. Is elite pick the Brit promo burying Vicky for wanting to get in the ring with her?
Huh? Yeah.
Any takers?
To get Vicky off the show. I don't want her in the promotion.
Yeah, we need to shave Vicky's time from the show. And folks, today's episode is brought to you by Manscaped, our go-to for men's below-the-waist grooming products. And folks, Manscaped has a new product alert. Can somebody do sirens? Nate? That's a chicken, I think.
I thought he was going to go to the take chopper and start firing that up.
Okay.
But no, it's the burrs.
Yeah, did you not enjoy my reggaeton horn then?
It was great. It's time to stop.
Wouldn't have been my guess.
Drop and order this brand new shaving kit that Manscaped just launched. They're introducing the Ultra Smooth Package, a specialized groin shaving kit to help you buff, protect, and smooth your most sensitive areas. So here's what you got in the Ultra Smooth Package. You got a crop shaver. You got the crop exfoliator. You got the crop gel. It's time to crop that bush of yours and get right to the roots with a discount just for you. You get 20% off free shipping at manscaped.com. You just use the code THISIS. So this is from the legends who introduced the electric ball hair trimmer. Now they got the razor and set to get you trimmed front to back and side to side, I think I would say. So here's the deal. It's hard to shave your balls. I think everybody would agree with that. I haven't seen either Nate or Mike's balls, but if they're anything like mine, they're wrinkly. The hair is just hard to get to. You got to you got to spread it out really to get them really close.
It's a full routine. It's a full routine.
It is not a problem with the Ultra Smooth Package. It's three steps. One, crop exfoliator. So after you wash yourself, you use this exfoliator. I've used this. It makes me feel great. I'm going to be honest. It reduces the risk of ingrown hairs. Then you use the crop gel. So you can really see where you're shaving with this unique clear shaving gel. That's just for your groin. It's got four essential oils. And then step three is time to shave. They got the crop shaver designed just for shaving the groin area. Three precision blades, extra wide lubricating strips. It's not your average razor. It's smaller, thicker, with a micro comb bar that allows for the best shave possible from any angle. And all these products are vegan, cruelty-free, and sulfate-free, so you know your manhood is in good hands. You got to get up close and personal with the best tools for the job. It's the Ultra Smooth Package from Manscaped. You get 20% off free shipping with the code THISIS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code THISIS at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. All right, time to talk about the things we didn't like from the show. And I know this is a show where we liked more than we didn't like, but Nate, I'm sure there's something that you think we ought to kick off. And maybe it's Vicky Guerrero. You already referenced it.
Yeah, it's Vicky Guerrero. This was incomprehensible to me. The initial angle where they introduced Andrade to me was incomprehensible. I can't believe they fucked it up that badly. Last week, I deleted the Andrade segment, I think. Did I? Maybe I did. Because it was the sit down and interview with JR, which was like fine. It was okay. But didn't really do anything to fire this guy up after the absolute debacle that his introduction was. This week was maybe the worst of all 4 weeks that he's been in this promotion. He comes out after one guy has been introduced for a match. Vicky does their stupid 15-year-old shtick that everybody hates. She's going to make an announcement. Andrade's standing there. The fucking next segment has already started. And then Matt Sydal is introduced. Matt Sydal brushes right by him. Mike Sydal stands there, gets in Andrade's face, and Vicky and Andrade back down from the yoga monster. Mike Sydal. This is dumbfounding. This is incomprehensible. This is maybe the single stupidest thing that's happened in AEW. What was the intent here? To remind you that Andrade's in the company? They would
have
been
sure that Mike Sydal goes over.
Yeah, if this is part of the Mike Seidel push, then okay. But it seems like an expensive push for Mike Seidel.
I have a theory. TJ Hawk texted me at the end of this segment with two words: political hit. And I think I've just decided this is payback for Andrade demanding creative control. Oh, motherfucker, you think you have better ideas than I do? Here are the shittiest ideas I could possibly imagine. You're done. Also, fuck Conrad Thompson. I think it's also there's some Conrad Tony Khan heat, maybe. It's a shot at him.
I did, honestly. I started to type a tweet that was like, are they trying to make Andrade look as bad as possible? Because that's what him not being on the show and not mentioned at all would have been better than what they did. They've made this guy fucking come to Jacksonville for this. Imagine you had to drive to Jacksonville so you could stand on a ramp and then you could be like, oh, Mike Seidel. And then you could turn around and leave. I reason a pretty good guess of what I think they were going for on the show. Like, oh, here's maybe the thinking. They were trying to establish this or do this other thing. I cannot even guess what the intent of this was. Are we supposed to think that there's actually a big announcement? But it's so important and so big that when Vicky can't, number one, wait, so Vicky can book whatever fucking match she wants, but she can't get a spot on the show to do a big announcement. Did Cody book all the spots for big announcements for the next year on Dynamite or something? This was god awful. I'm mad about what they're doing with Andrade. And yeah, you know, I was going to say, oh, you know, they should maybe give the AAA title to Jungle Boy or something. Presumably Andrade is going to win the AAA title from Kenny Omega. I have to guess that's what AAA wants to do. And like, what the fuck?
It's just like something that it was so like disjointed. Like, all right, we have this rematch from Dark. It was a really fun match on Dark with Dante Martin and Matt Seidel. I was stoked to get this match. And then, like, before even the match happened, we had, excuse me, and it's just like, didn't Vicky Guerrero, when she first appeared in AEW, said she was dropping the excuse me and the cougar act? Like I
don't remember
I
her saying remember that. That does seem like a thing they would probably try to have done at the beginning of AEW. Like, hey.
Right.
The problem is that's the only fucking thing she can do is say excuse me, so you can't get away from that, because then she has to fucking talk and promo, and she cannot.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, Andrade last week did a pretty solid job, as much as one can for it, just a pointless manager role, to say, hey, look, I'm a third generation luchador. Vicky, of course, is linked into Lucha Libre history. We have a lot of connections. We have a lot of things here. So, of course, when I come into this company, I'm going to go to Vicky Guerrero. Like, that makes perfect sense there. But then you have this here, and Nate pretty much hammered all the big points here. I think Andrade was just there so he can do his Jiro Eichmann and show off that his jacket was embroidered El Idolo on the inside. Because that was all he did. That was all Andrade did. He came to Jacksonville to come out before the second match of the show and to show that his jacket was embroidered El Idolo. Like, that was it.
Do they have data that says that Vicky Guerrero, like, drives viewership? Is that why she's all over the show all the time? Maybe, like, you could just, like, have Pentagon win matches instead, and then you'd have, like, a Latinx star instead of putting Vicky Guerrero up and down the show to make every segment worse. Thoughts, Aaron?
Well, what's funny to me is, like, the whole thing with Vicky, like, obviously some part of it was they wanted to keep WWE wanted to give Vicky money, which they could have just given her fucking money after Eddie died, since, you know, they killed Eddie. But it was the whole thing was a rib on her. Like, they knew she was bad, and they put her on TV to put her in humiliating and embarrassing places.
And have her at fucking Edge and stuff.
Right. So, I mean, they were fucking with her the whole time. It was never that she was compelling on TV. People hated her, and not in a good way. And so now they're just using the same act, but putting it on TV like we're supposed to like it or enjoy it. And it's never been something that was supposed to be enjoyed in any real way. So it's fucking it's hard to understand. I did find a quote from her. She said, this is before she started, right when she started. She had just done the first thing with Nyla. She says, well, and I have to remember, too, that I don't want to be the same character that was at WWE coming into AEW. It's time for me to reinvent myself.
Oops.
So I didn't, like, just make up something in my brain. She did say that.
She said that, at least. I couldn't find anything.
She's doing bad idea from bad creative from 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I know I do this, like, once a week, so I'm just going to have to start paying my Patreon money to Patrick Cosmos, but he made this joke in the Discord, which was Andrade is somehow the only wrestler still on SmackDown. Great bit. Great joke. So, yeah, I don't know, but it sucks. Mike, anything else you thought sucked from this show?
Well, I mean, there's a lot on this show that I really enjoyed. Just the general MJF stuff. Like, in general, like, MJF put Sean Spears up to do, like, the lamest looking chair shot with Sammy to put him out of their match next week. And then we had this brawl between MJF, Spears, and Wardlow and the remainder of the Inner Circle, because we assumed that FTR and Proud and Powerful are just out of the picture here. And just, like, MJF's promo just got to a point where, like, I appreciate a good, solid heel promo. And he has the capacity to have these promos. But since going to Jacksonville, I think an argument can be made that at least with his promo abilities, he's probably regressed the most out of someone not named Chris Jericho, which, hey, that's who he's been tied to for the last, like, 6 months. And then this is all, like, to service that Sammy comes out. He does the big tie turn. He then shows how to do a good chair shot to Wardlow. Wardlow took a chair shot like a champ. And then Sammy did a good, like, 30-second promo. Sammy came out and said, on Wednesday, this company finds out they chose the wrong guy. I'm going to show you why I'm the best ever, and you know it. Like, that's all he had to say. Sammy's not a tremendous promo, but he hit his marks. He hit the points of this, and it was so successful. You compare and contrast that to MJF, who just went meandering, talking about how he beat up Dean Malenko and made comments about his Parkinson's. Like, it just is not an effective heel promo. It's just, like, at a certain level, like, yes, I know that, like, one of his tactics is getting the cheap heat wherever possible, but when that's all what you do as a heel promo, it's not cheap heat. It's the only heat you get.
Yeah, I think it was pretty much fine. I like he called Alex Marvez pig vomit, and I actually laughed at that. That was funny to me. I think mostly because it's just like he's not doing the stuff that's like bordering on edgy or whatever. He's like, he didn't do Alex Marvez, you're fat, or Alex Marvez, you have Parkinson's. He was just called him just the lowest possible thing you can be, pig vomit. So that popped me. I don't know. You know, I think what you said about the cheap heat stuff is not incorrect, but that's also like central to his character and always has been. So I can't really take that as a knock at him. Like, this is a guy, the character is like a guy who was raised and socialized and educated on WWF heel promos of the 80s. So, like, the cheap heat stuff is just like, you know, central to his existence as a human being. And I kind of accept that as just what his character is. Like, his character is a guy who's just like, your sports team sucks, you're all fat and you're poor. And it's not, they're not cheap heat. It's like, no, that's, I'm a cheap heat elemental. He's like, I'm the icon of cheap heat. I am cheap heat given shape and form and turned into a primal being that exists fueled solely by cheap heat. So from that, I think looking at it from that perspective, it's like, you just kind of have to accept it, that that's what the MJF character is. And he's very consistent with this. That doesn't bother me. I don't know what else he said. I laughed about pig vomit.
It's just the point of heat is to make me want to watch you have a wrestling match where you lose, and MJF doesn't do that for me. So,
Yeah, well, they're trying to elevate him to be the top heel guy, at which point, you know, he'll beat somebody and then he'll lose.
He did a line in this promo where he said, Dean Malenko's so old, the rainbow was black and white.
That was corny.
Yeah, I just that's what I think. I think MJF's corny most of the time. Like,
yeah, that's anyway. why I liked Pig Vomit, because it was like, it was real and it was grounded. Here's what I'll compare it to. The god awful, which one was it? Batman vs. Superman movie that was painful to sit through and is worse than every Marvel movie, despite what people would tell you. Just unbelievably dreary and stupid and ugly and bad. There's only one good scene in the whole thing, and that's where Jesse Eisenberg doing Max Landis as Lex Luthor goes and gets a jar full of piss and brings it into a courtroom and like calls, it's like a jar full of piss. That's the only good scene of the whole thing, because it's the only thing that's like has any sort of tactile, real sense of being grounded and existing in reality and having like form and shape and not just being like CGI lasers shooting all over the place, right? That to me is Pig Vomit. That's MJF being like, I'm not doing cheap heat and calling you fat, Marvez. I'm not doing cheap heat and saying you're stealing money and you're old and you're Tony Khan's friend or whatever. I'm just going to call you the lowest possible garbage that I can, Pig Vomit. And that was good to me.
The only good joke about Alex Marvez tonight was the person who said Alex Marvez looks like he spends $70 a month on OnlyFans.
That was Deuce, by the way. So you just shouted out a Deuce tweet.
I know what I shouted out. I know what I'm doing. All right.
It was $700 also.
Fuck, $700. Either way, it was funny. My delete. I mean,
I think Alex Marvez is a woke king for supporting the fine sex workers of OnlyFans. Sure. And I don't think people should stand in judgment of that. That's what I think.
I don't have any judgment of it for sure. My delete. I mean, you guys picked the two things that were bad from the show. I just want to talk about. I'm sorry to do a mic here, but their editing is really starting to irritate me. They cut a lot. We used to talk early on this show about how AEW was the opposite of WWE in that way. They would let shots linger and let you watch the match. It's gotten worse and worse where they cut all the time. They've started cutting on impact like WWE does, which I really despise. It's like, just let me watch the fucking move. They missed the major spot in the Adam Page Powerhouse Hobbs match.
Spinebuster spot, yeah.
Yeah, so just bad editing, bad directing. It's becoming a harder to watch, just like on its own, you know, the terms of like the actual television show, and you hate to see it.
Yeah, I almost want to do a tweet every time they miss a big spot, because it does happen, I would say, at least three times for every show. And I've refrained from doing that because it would just get obnoxious to read, I think. But yeah, you know, once you start thinking about, oh, they fucking missed that spot, they missed that spot. And if you watch it all with any level of attentiveness, you can feel it coming when they're about to miss a fucking spot.
Yes.
When Brian Cage is chasing Ricky Starks up the fucking ramp, and they cut back to the action in the ring, and Adam Page is flying off the ropes or whatever, and then they cut back to Brian Cage, and you can feel every fucking second they're sitting on Brian Cage too long, and you're going, go back to the spot, and then they go back to the spot and it's halfway over, and I'm like, I could call this show better sitting on my couch from home. And I've never directed a show in my life, but you can just feel it coming, and it makes you mad to see something coming that you can't stop, and then it happens exactly as you thought it would. It's also not encouraging when this is their 600th show from Daily's Place and they haven't like solved those right. things where it's like, no, don't actually, maybe don't shoot Chris Statlander's boop from directly underneath the corner where you can't see her signature move that she's doing. Maybe that's a stupid thing to do. Now they're going to have to go do that in 1500 different arenas across the country. And that's, yeah, does not inspire a ton of confidence. They should have better direction.
Thank you all for finally understanding my plight. And this is what happens, Nate. Just last week, we were going, hey, it doesn't sound like that they ADR things in a wind tunnel with a cell phone anymore. No, they have to miss, like, I feel like every match had at least one major, like, direction snafu. And yeah. it's something that, like, yes, you're doing a different setup, but this is something that you have had issues with throughout the promotion. Like, it seems like that I remember, like, oh, they missed a spot here. They missed a spot here. And the fact that you're not focusing on that, instead you're focusing on cuts on Impact, having as many as possible, it's just not a pleasant visual experience. It's just one of those things that you watch it and it drains you. It's exhausting. And, you know, it's one of those things that, especially for something like Will Hobbs, like, that spine buster was his big spot of that match. And they missed it because they had to show, as Nate said, it was like watching a car wreck in slow motion. Like, you saw it coming with it. And it's just exhausting.
When they go back on the road, they're also going to do all these crowd reaction shots and sit on those a second longer and be like, no, you fucking missed the crowd reaction. And now sitting on it, you missed the spot.
Keith
so
Mitchell.
I'm going to get mad on the show every week.
Keith Mitchell, we get it. There's a crowd there. It's great to see a crowd. We don't need to see every single Jungle Boy sign. Like, let us see his entrance. Let us see him soak it in. Like there was like a moment that like he was like visibly looking up to the sky before Kenny came out. Right. That like it might have been the longest shot that they had before that match, because like they lingered on. I was like, you know what, this is nice. And you know, this is where you'd be like, all right, we all take moments. Like, you know, he's probably thinking about like what all the steps that led to this, and like that's like a thing about like his dad. And it's like, that's a cool moment. Like that's something that like as a fan, if you're pay attention to the product and you keep up on things, you're like, okay, like that's like a nice thing here. And with the way that they do direction, is something that kind of moment should be happening a lot more, but instead he's like, you have this here and you kind of like grab onto it and latch onto it, because who knows next time that they're going to miss a spine buster.
I'm going to shout out one good shot that they did, just in the interest of being nice. And when they did the big spot in the Ethan Page match where the Bear Man was doing a dive and then Scorpio ran and pushed Ethan out and took the dive for him, they shot that really well. They had the crane camera that they never use for that, and so we saw the entire spot happen organically, and the spot looked great. It was Ethan Page standing there. We saw the bear guy, you know, starting up his run for the dive, and then we saw the whole thing in one shot, where in the foreground Scorpio Sky runs over and pushes Ethan Page out of the way, and we see the whole dive happening in the ring on the other side of the screen. And it's like, oh wow, that actually, it makes sense that Scorpio Sky went and pushed him out of the way and actually took that dive. Like, the whole thing computes, and it's a very well-timed spot, and everybody looked good doing it. I want that level of attention to detail fucking throughout the show instead of for one spot.
Yeah, Mike, you made this point on Light this morning, but I was thinking about it in more detail. It's just like you said, that's one of the problems of having a guy like Keith Mitchell who's been around wrestling forever, you know, is that sometimes all the bullshit that's existed in wrestling forever is going to seep in. And that's one thing about AEW, is like, you got Tony Khan, Cody, the Bucks, and Kenny originally as like the decision makers, right? Guys who haven't been making decisions in wrestling for the past 20, 30 years. And that was a real, you know, shot in the arm to the production of this company with all that. But now it feels like as we go longer and longer, it gets more like the wrestling that we've seen before. We get more interference spots, you know, more angles, more run-ins, and it's like, and more of this editing and more of that production. And so it concerns you about the road that we're on, because they are getting away from like some of these fresher ideas, I think.
And it's right, something. Go ahead, Nate.
I think it's the reality of trying to write an original television show week in and week out, and Tony Khan saying, oh, you know, I'll do it all myself or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll do the book, I'll do the stories, I'll plot out Conan's angles in AAA, and I'll criticize Gato's booking. And then it's like, it becomes pretty easy to rely on a run-in for a big reaction and a heel cheating finish interference on three matches in a row when you have to do this every week. You kind of have to be more conservative about things and be like, hey, let's have a match with no interference, a straight ahead finish, and just like put some money in the bank so that when you do all these other things, they mean more.
Yeah. And just like one last thing, not to belabor the point, Keith Mitchell has been in the wrestling industry since the mid 80s. He started as a camera operator in WCCW in Dallas. The fact that he is reverting to these tropes that people have called out for WWE production-wise over the last 15 years. I would say the last 15 years, I think, is a fair statement to say about the current production style in WWE. That actually scares me in a way, because the fact that you have Kevin Dunn, who I think is around the same age there, and these two leading the production for the top two promotions in North America, you're not having that breath of fresh air like that we were seeing at the beginning of the promotion. Like, maybe it's something that gets someone who used to do the direction for ESPN games and have them be like, all right, take shot one, take shot two. I mean, it's, or have someone within the industry or outside the industry, like, come in and maybe not, don't give them Dynamite, but see what could happen if you're not having someone who's been in wrestling for longer than all of us have been alive. And it's going to be like, what's going to happen after Keith Mitchell's gone? Well, it's going to be people who've been influenced that in like, and doing a style there, and it's just going to perpetuate. It's going to self-perpetuate unless they take a step back and realize, all right, these things here are not benefiting the experience we're trying to put on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if that's a thing, like, you know, Turner's like, hey, you know, who's going to direct your show? Oh, it's somebody that has X number of years directing your show. Okay, good. We can be confident that'll look professional or whatever. That makes sense, but this is also supposed to be the young, hip brand that is not doing the thing the other company's doing all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would like the, I would like it to look different. I would like it to look fresh, and I would like it to be giving you angles and perspectives and direction styles that aren't like all the other wrestling that we've always seen. Like, doing like a Riptide wrestling would not work. Like, Riptide shoots all their stuff in a way that would not work. But at least it's like, we're going to do a different thing than every other company in the world about pro wrestling. Even like half the fucking audience came from New Japan and watching Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks in New Japan. Like, New Japan doesn't shoot like this at all. Like, New Japan is steady and wide, and they let you watch the match. And I would be, you know, that would be preferable for me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've always, whatever else you would say about the path New Japan has been on, the way it looks is always great. I mean, it's an excellent looking product. Let's get into the rest of the show from this week. It started out with Marvez interviewing Sammy Guevara as he walked in. Sean Spears laid him out with a chair, which he said was compliments of MJF. This led into Hangman Adam Page versus Powerhouse Hobbs. During the match, Starks brought out the FTW belt for Hobbs, you know, as they'd done for Cage. Hobbs was willing to take it. Cage came out, took it back, forced Starks to run away, ripped Ricky Starks' clothes off to everyone's, you know, great admiration. And that led into the spot we were talking about. And then Page won with the Deadeye. That's the other really annoying thing about missing the Spinebuster is Hobbs was about to lose. And that was his big spot of the match to, like, sell that he could have beaten Adam Page on this night, you know? So that makes it even more annoying.
Really good match, though. Yeah. Well, I was very impressed by Will Hobbs in this match. He has great heel presence, and yeah, should be a future star. You know, I mean, he's already like halfway there. So yeah, this was a really good start and open to Dynamite. And another one where it's like, well, it wasn't like, you know, blow away, kick out after kick out after kick out. You know, Young Bucks tag special. Well, we're going to do a blowaway match right off the top of the show and blow everything away. It was like a nice sound story match with two good workers, but just kind of let you settle into like, oh, this is good pro wrestling on this show. And also, they did do a nice story. VOW was talking about, hey, you know, when Adam Page had his first match against Brian Cage or whatever, in a very similar context against the Team FTW guy, and Team FTW, you know, beat him and upset him and sort of derailed his title challenge here in the exact same circumstances, you get some nice continuity, a nice little story where it's like, that was this, that's where we were. And now Adam Page has developed. He's come along, because of what Brian Cage is doing and, you know, turning face or whatever. Adam Page is making forward progress because he didn't fall in those same traps. He came out of this with a win. So, you know, you see that they're now building Adam Page back up for that world title challenge.
Yeah, no, this match rocked. I feel like this is one of Hobbs's best performances in the company. And I thought that Page, like always, was very strong in this match. And yeah, this was like a really solid opener. And even with how much interference was throughout the show, I feel like this was pointed interference. It was done in a right way, and it led into the finish in a way that, you know, did not necessarily, yeah, it did kind of like blow back. Like most of the interferences on the show blew back on the heels. Like, did y'all notice that? I mean, most of it has been like the heels. Like the only heel that I think won by interference was Ethan Page. All the other heels, you know, you had Hangman Page was able to kind of deal with the failed distraction there. The Bunny messed up with interference, and then Kenny Omega and Jungle Boy. Well, we had someone there helping out there. It was the Elite Hunter, Frankie Kazarian.
Which means I think that there was interference in every match on the show.
No, not Matt Sydal and
that's true.
Donald Martin. True.
Yeah, I think they think it's not a problem or bad if the interference doesn't lead to the finish, which I think is correct, unless you do it every single time.
Every match on every show.
They do. Yeah. Like if you do interference in the middle of the match and then the match goes on, then you can kind of be like, okay, there was a story element before and now we have the real match and the real finish. Or if you have, oh, the heels interfered, but it didn't cost the babyface of the match, they won up to them. I think my opinion of their perspective is they're like, oh, that's not a match interference cheating finish because it didn't go the heels way or whatever, which is true if you do it once per show and not three times per show.
Shit, once per month. I mean,
you're exactly right. Once per month. But even once per show would be better than,
yes,
you know, three times per show.
Yeah, I can't remember what, it was some VOW tweet, and I think Joe had said, it was about the Christian thing. It's like, oh, there might be an angle coming after the match, and somebody replied, there's an angle after every match.
I want to shout out Joe for finding his one criticism of AEW, which is, of course, something we've talked about a lot. About just going to the back immediately after every big angle. They did the big angle with Conan, and then they just cut to the announcers and cut to the back. And it's like, no, let it breathe. Can we see Conan trying to recover? He's an old man, got dropped on his head. He's had many surgeries. Like, let it breathe and let it sink in. Everything is just angle, 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 angle.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Then we got a video segment about the Jungle Boy versus Omega match. This was on Road 2. Excellent segment. We had Jungle Boy talking about the crowd response, getting him over the top of the Casino Battle Royale. There was a lot of talk about Jungle Boy being a prospect, reaching his potential sooner than expected. And the story of Omega was how he's become more unhinged and egotistical, how that might come back to bite him. And, you know, the idea here was giving us some doubt that Omega would be able to be Jungle Boy, giving Jungle Boy, you know, some viability as a challenge. And of course, they pointed out that on the last Saturday Night Dynamite, Brody Lee won the TNT title in a somewhat surprise by beating Cody. And so, you know, could lightning strike again? But excellent video.
I think there was a lot of talk on late this morning about how they should put this on the show, and then they put it on the show. Any mea culpas from you guys on that?
No, I think what Mike said was they should have put it on Dynamite last week, which I stand by Mike's point.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's good they put it on this week. Should have been on last week.
But it was good, so I'm glad they did. A Young Bucks pre-tape was up next, and the text of like what I'm about to read you cannot capture what this pre-tape was like. So they're saying, people say the Young Bucks are overrated. We're the longest reigning tag champs in company history. They run through all the people they've beaten. Now they're going to beat Eddie and Penta because that's not even a real tag team. Now, this was a truly great segment that you just can't understand from what they talked about. But Nick Jackson has somehow become the more charismatic Young Buck.
it's the hair dye. It's the beard dye. It's
insane. Sarah was mentioning the danglies. She was very interested in the danglies and how Nick Jackson was like has gone crazy. And I'm like, yeah, it's all great. Brandon Cutler was trying to clip in, and they wouldn't let him.
Nick Jackson cacawed like a bird very loudly.
Yeah.
This is the highlight of the segment. It was almost the highlight of the episode to me. Yes. Is that the resurgent charisma Nick Jackson looking dead on to camera with a wild man's eyes. It was halfway to Macho Man Randy Savage. He looked like a crazy person. He did giant caw-caw bird noises for no reason, and I loved it. He's Randy Savage.
He was great. He was great.
It just was so good.
Brandon Cutler is like, they don't want him to talk, but he does get in there with one good note, and they're like, oh, that was pretty good. And then he's like, he pumps his fist. He's like, yes, I got one in.
The only thing,
I love that. Great crony.
The only thing I wanted them to do differently there was when Nick was like, oh, yeah, that's good. Then I just wanted him to say that line, like, as if Cutler had not said it. That would have been perfect.
Yeah. Just, this is, it's something that, like, they've done it again. They found, like, new manic energy that just works so well across it. And, you know, that they have taken the idea of, they look insane and have made it into a character choice, and it's become one of the more entertaining things on TV.
Oh, it's great.
I'm going to watch it again after we're done taping, just because Nick Jackson, I think, found his mojo when he started doing the merch freak on BTE, which is where he was like Chris Angel mind freak, but about selling Young Bucks merch. And he would do magic tricks and look like a weirdo at the camera and be shirtless and like waving around Young Bucks dollars. And he's channeled that, I think, into his new bird call to Randy Savage character.
Yeah, but it had all been really good. But I think what led to that great tape tonight was learning that while the Young Bucks themselves were vaccinated, Sasha Banks was not vaccinated. I think that's really what pulled him over the line.
Yeah. Now I love the Young Bucks. I don't care. They continue to surprise and just be very entertaining.
Yeah, they're great. And then we had the Tully Blanchard and Conan segment that we talked about, and then Matt Sydal versus Dante Martin with the Andrade thing that happened, and then Sydal won this match with the Lightning Spiral.
This was a great match that sadly everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, Andrade had his thing that just made no sense, but you know, Dante Martin is great, and especially when you consider like how young he is and how little he's been in the industry, and you see him doing this stuff now. Like, I know that Nate, you pointed this out, but I know this is in picture. They had this spot where it was Dante Martin near the corner, was on the outside, and then Matt Sydal did like his slice leg lariat through the ropes and caught him with it. That was just insane. Like, this match rocked. Like, if it wasn't for, I would say actually, with the exception of the main event, this was my match of the night. I thought that this was tremendous stuff.
Yeah, I was leaving this one for you to pick as your elite, Mike. I thought this match was really good. They had a bunch of just like fresh spots that you don't see in every other match. And they had, you know, executed them all with like perfect chemistry, and they all made sense in the context of the match. And somebody said it on Twitter, maybe it was Grant Akuma, talking about how they also had all these different pin traps and pinning attempts coming, you know, logically from these cool spots that they were doing, but they all looked like they were struggling in every single pin. You could see, you know, the legs stressing against the other guys. They were trying to trap the legs for a pin and everything, and it just you know, made for a very exciting match, even in the sort of in between moments. So yeah, this rocked. You want to see something come from this. I don't know what does. But it's also kind of cool that they were like, oh, Dante Martin and Matt Sydal had a great match on Dark. They deserve to be able to do that with an audience on TNT or whatever. That's a cool thing you can do in this promotion, and it's cool that they did it.
Jungle Boy was backstage. He says it's going to be the biggest match of his life. Christian comes out. He agrees with Jungle Boy, but tells him not to just be happy to be in the spot. You should be pissed off because some people think you don't deserve it, including Kenny Omega, and encourages him to shock the world again. Very funny that, you know, we've talked about, especially Mike, that Jungle Boy's not a good promo. They literally gave Jungle Boy one line in this promo. Well, and then he said thanks to Christian at the end. I was going to point out, Nate, I don't know if you saw when I tweeted this out, but there was a story about Jungle Boy that I saw earlier today. He said, every time they ask me to do promos, I kind of duck and run away so I don't have to. A lot of people give me advice here and there. Actually, our producer, Jess Palumbo, has helped me a lot because she's there all day filming people. When the time comes to buckle down and get good at it, there are a lot of people who will be able to help. Very funny.
Yeah, no, I relate to that. That puts him more over in my mind because I'm also avoidant of my problems.
Sure, I get that.
So more power to you, Jungle Boy. I think they're doing a good job of making his, you know, his dialogue in these little skits or whatever is very functional, and you don't have to, you know, try to play above his head and have him cut flowery Miro promos about cleavers and meat. He's just like, no, I'm just who I am. I'm just here trying to be a babyface, do my best or whatever. That's all you have to do.
And Mark Sterling was backstage with Jade Cargill. He says they finally reached a deal with Shop AEW, and they have a 10% off deal for Jade's new t-shirts. I think they said she had two. And then Mark says, you know, look at this boring Dark Order shirt. He tries to rip it, but he can't do so. Jade takes the shirt from him and rips it because she's that bitch.
Great little segment. We love this pairing. I love the sycophantic energy that Smart Mark Sterling brings to all of these, where he's just happy to be there. They're a great pairing. I also, this is obviously like was plotted out and written, but I like to imagine that this is a product of Jade Cargill being a great worker, where she took the shirt from him and then let him finish his promo, then did her own promo, then ripped it because she's a fucking worker and she knows how to put an exclamation point on it. Good segment.
Next, we had Alex Marvez with MJF and Spears and Wardlow. We talked about this whole segment, Sammy coming out on top at the end, building to their match for next week. And then Miro was backstage, and he did the God's Favorite Champion promo. I missed this somehow. But
you skipped the whole angle? What happened?
What did I skip?
You skipped the whole in the ring angle with Sammy, or did you just said that?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it a little bit.
The only thing I want to say is what I said on Twitter is that they're like Sammy is now the focus of this feud. Like,
yeah,
and they even, like I said before, the stinger on his music is just his name. And it's like, that's when you like Jericho comes out, gets a pop from the crowd, but no music, no big entrance, no to do about Jericho, but Sammy Guevara gets the big hero's entrance. So I think, you know, a worse wrestling company would still just be pushing Jericho. And like, you can see a concerted effort here to be like, okay, now we're going to elevate Sammy out of here.
The thing about it is, though, Sammy needs to win this match. And I'm not confident that's going to happen.
Yeah. Because at this point, if Sammy does not win this match, like, you can't say, like, oh, he got the pinfall in the Steam Stampede match as, like, this big thing. And when I was after the big kerfuffle, like, he needs to be able to take the big step forward. And it needs to be MJF's already made that big step forward. He's already made. Like, Sammy Guevara, like, we keep on saying, like, is he a made person? Is he going to be, like, the focal point here? But he needs to win next week, I feel like, for that long-term development.
I think it would be good if he wins. I think, realistically, if he loses, that we're going to be like, he should have won that. And then, like, three weeks later, they'll have done some other angle and, like, put a big spotlight on him or whatever. And I'll be like, oh, I don't know. I think they got it back with Sammy. I think that's realistically what will happen. What he should have done is he should have won the fucking feud against Matt Hardy 8 months ago.
I will say that they had Sammy so hot when there was that like thing of him breaking off of Inner Circle, and I thought they'd lost it then, and he was back hotter than ever tonight. So the AEW crowd has certainly shown a willingness to like get back behind people. It's not as big of a concern as I think it is, but sometimes I'm just always concerned you're going to miss, you know, when the iron is hottest.
I think wrestling fans desperately want people to be stars because there haven't been new stars in so long. I think wrestling fans desperately want to get behind young guys and have young guys that they can point to and say, that's our star, that's our generation, we're coming up. I think they are going to give so much latitude to this company to get people over and have people be stars and make the right decisions. You look at the other promotion, it took at least 10 years to break the audience and until they were totally toxic and had turned against them and forgot what wrestling is supposed to be and forgot what stars are. It takes a very long time, I think, to break that natural inclination of wrestling fans to want to support the guys they like.
Then we had Miro backstage, and we talked a lot about this promo without pointing out that it's building to a match with Brian Pillman Jr. next week.
Yeah. Well, that's not the focus. That's not, you know, that's secondary. He's going to beat Brian Pillman. It's fine. Whatever.
Yes. But it's good. I'm pro Brian Pillman Jr. So I'm excited about this little push for Brian Pillman.
I personally couldn't throw my weight behind anyone who stands in the path of God's favorite champion.
I mean, that's a fine point.
Who can stop the path of Mirwa?
Ethan Page versus Bear Bronson was next. And Ethan Page won with the Ego's Edge. The 9 o'clock match, folks. Ethan Page versus Bear Bronson.
The after worst the match on the show.
Yes, it was bad. After the match, Page said he's not done with Darby. He's going to be the nail in Darby's coffin. And he challenges Darby to a coffin match for Road Rager.
So I think everybody expected a big angle here because it was the 9 o'clock match for the individual match that made the least sense, being like a pushed thing on this show, right? This is like, okay, you've got Ethan who's in a good angle with Darby and this, you know, undercard tag team that just came from Dark. But yeah, and there was no Sting return here. I guess you got a big challenge, but yeah, this was a curious choice to put in this spot.
Yeah, so it felt like they were building this program in like a very sensical way that I was into, even though I don't really care about Ethan Page. I was like, all right, we're going to get there to like a cool match. And now this feels like an insane escalation of the program that was going well so far.
Yeah, it feels like they wanted to hotshot a big match to get more tickets in Miami is what it felt like.
Yes, I don't know this, but somebody I think said in the Discord that the tickets are not moving very well for the Miami show, which seems like a surprise.
No, well, it's not Miami.
Yeah, not a surprise. Cause Miami is bad fan culture. Also, they've been running Florida for 70 weeks or whatever.
True.
Really a hardcore AEW guy, you've probably gone up for a pay-per-view or two or three.
Right. We got the Brit promo. She's mad at Vicky, but she'll send her home with a prescription. Vicky cuts a promo. Nyla's coming for the women's title. Vicky's involved in this. I just cannot give a shit about it, even though I'm high on Brit and Nyla.
No, yeah, it kills the angle. She's got to get off the show. I have to, I have to excise my Vicky Guerrero demon or something, so I stop saying that on every show, but.
Chris Statlander versus the Bunny was up next. Chris won with the Big Bang Theory. After the match, you know, the women's division is so important that after the match, they did an angle that didn't involve any of the women. Blade attacked Orange Cassidy. TH2 came to help. Blade retrieved brass knuckles that Orange took from the Bunny during the match and hit Orange with them.
Also, the finish centered around the men.
Yes, also true.
I guess that's probably like their... They think, oh, well, you know, we don't think our audience cares about the women's matches as much. So we're going to try and prop up the division by putting our big star Orange Cassidy in there. You know, I can see their logic on that.
But it doesn't create stars, though.
Right. It's just like a whole problem with this promotion is a lot of self-fulfilling prophecies. It's like, okay, if you treat it that way, that's how it's going to turn out. Also, if you chase ratings constantly, instead of trying to try new things and build new things, the same shit is going to be the stuff that pops the ratings. Like, that's how it's going to happen forever. So yeah. It's just kind of, it's frustrating. QT Marshall is backstage with Tony. He was mad that Brock Anderson won the TNT Wrestler of the Week last week. Tony asks him about the upcoming match with Cody. QT says he's here on Dynamite doing the work, unlike Cody, and he hopes Cody gets cast in a superhero film, and goes away. All right. I didn't pronounce film correctly the first time, so I just wanted to make sure I stuck it in my brain. Brian Pillman Jr. is backstage. He says, it sounds like Miro has a messiah complex. Yeah. Are you listening, Brian? Come on, buddy.
Hey, Brian Pillman Jr. knows what a messiah complex is. I was impressed. That guy seems dumb.
Maybe Miro wrote this promo for Brian Pillman. And Brian says, but you just want to pick fights you think you can win. I mean, I think that's the point, frankly, Brian Pillman Jr. He says, well, I've got a complex too. I was born on the wrong side of the tracks. Very strange line from Brian Pillman. He's going to put Miro's ego in check. That was it.
He had his own unique fit wearing a mesh champion football jersey.
Yeah.
He posted a selfie earlier and Sean Ross Sapp was in the replies saying, I'm jealous of the outfit, to be honest. That's all.
would love to see Sean Ross Sapp in this outfit.
It's like, yeah, no, what you're jealous of? We're all jealous of the body because he's got like a super Adonis body or whatever. So it doesn't matter what he wears.
Yeah. Try it out, SRS. Let's see you post it. Post that fit.
WTF.
That's right. Eddie and Pentagon were backstage with, oh, I meant to do, I forgot to do a listener delete, and it was from our listener.
So long ago. It was a day ago.
Yeah. Danny H., who said Alex Abrahantes with Penta and Kingston was
yes,
his
thank
delete.
You. Thank you, Danny H.
Yeah.
By the way, if you fucking reply to me on the account where I say get rid of Alex Abrahantes and you're like, no, I'm going to mute you. So be aware.
I mean, it's fair. Nate mostly deals with the Twitter account, so I have to, you know, let him do what he wants.
You know, if you're going to reply to that, you need to provide a proof of your Patreon purchase that you're an $8 subscriber. Otherwise, mute.
Nice. Eddie says, you took people out in wrestling. I take people out in real life. You only care about your egos, the titles.
Like, fucking Eddie standing anywhere in proximity of Alex Abrahantes hurts Eddie. Eddie looks less cool standing next to Pentagon Jr. because this fucking goofball is on the end of the screen. I mean, what? He looks insane.
I've never heard Nate so fired up about anything. He's so mad about Alex Abrahantes.
You put all this money and investment into Eddie Kingston, the coolest fucking guy in your promotion. And then you got him over Alex Abrahantes in his shiny jacket.
Well, I mean, he is too fat.
If he was doing, he would be better doing a racist gimmick, is the truth.
Okay, now let's.
That's the truth.
Let's stop with things we can't take back. I mean, we don't have to call. We don't have to name call.
What? How's that a name call? He would be more interesting if he was doing a racist gimmick where he's an Arab sheik. That's the truth.
All right.
Which suspiciously has been erased from the internet.
Interesting. The main event, Kenny Omega versus Jungle Boy for the Men's World title. The Elite Hunter, Frankie Kazarian, played an important role. Omega won with the One-Winged Angel. After the match, Omega went to attack Jungle Boy, but Christian made the save. Matt Hardy and the Hardy Family Office attack. Christian almost gets the kill switch, but the Young Bucks sneak up from behind and super kick his ass. And all the heels celebrate together.
And they do big tear faces, and Matt Jackson does his fake crying. And then, what was it? One of the Young Bucks was doing like the Jeff Hardy thing and was trying to get Matt to do it with him. And Matt like started to do it with him, but the fucking director missed it. It was a good, fun little heel sold.
All right. That is Dynamite for this week. If you enjoy our show, the best way to support us is to go to patreon.com/everythingelite. We got 3 tiers. Sign up for any of them. We didn't have a bonus show last week because, well, there was a lot going on. So we brought you an extra long edition of Light to make up for that. And we put the this episode live for the $5 subscribers, too. So congratulations. We're excited for everyone. Thank you for subscribing. We'll have more bonus content coming up soon. We also have a Discord. Join that. It's almost the end of the month. We'll have new stuff in July. The whole Patreon's changing in August, just so everybody knows. So get excited for that. All new content coming in August. Patreon.com/everythingelite. That's it. Next week on Dynamite.
I really played myself getting all fucking fired up at the end of the show.
You did. You did. It's all right. Next week on Dynamite, the main event, MJF versus Sammy Guevara, the TNT title, Miro versus Brian Pillman Jr., Britt Baker and Rebel will take on Nyla and Vicky Guerrero. I'm excited for Nate to respond to that match. And then the Bucks will take on Penta and Eddie with Alex Abrahantes. So I'm starting to get worried.
Thoros in the chat is saying, I'm neutral on Alex. I do not accept neutrality on Alex. If you are neutral, you are abetting Alex Abrahantes, and I will not have it. I need negativity on Alex Abrahantes.
I had to say, Dynamite next week looks okay. I'm really excited to talk with Nate afterwards.
Yeah.
It looks like a good show, I think, except for the Vicky Guerrero match, which I hope is a swerve. If it's not a swerve and it's just their data indicates that all the attention and as far as women on the show goes to Vicky Guerrero, then they have to throw out the data. They have to get a new audience because it's not acceptable.
All right. Well, that's. that's what's going to be on Dynamite next week. We'll talk about it on the show. We'll be live, so sign up for the $8 tier and listen to us live on the show next week, or you get the replay forever for the rest of your life. You can go back and listen to the live version. And this episode, you're not going to know this if you're listening to this on our podcast feed, but there was a big malfunction in the middle of the show, and you'll never know that if you weren't listening on the live feed. So,
or unless you listen to Aaron saying it just now.
Yeah, but you didn't get to hear it happen. You know, this is like, this is a tease for
even the patrons are missing out, because the real action was Mike doing like throat cutting motions at us, like, oh, it's dead. And I was like, Mike, if it's dead, then why can't we talk? Why do we need to stop?
I think we were going live.
Okay, no, I think Mike was saying he was going to kill me for fucking up the stream, I think is what that was.
I'll peel back the curtain. The reason why I did the throat cut was because the way that OBS works is it pulls the audio directly from our podcasting web platform. So no matter what, how you were talking, even though it wasn't being recorded by the platform, it was getting picked up by OBS.
Okay. But why do I care? What difference does it make if it gets picked up by OBS?
I think he's just saying live listeners could still hear it.
Okay. Well, that's fine, right? Isn't that what we're giving them?
We want them to hear the fuck up? Didn't start saying, God, I fucking hate these patrons as soon as...
Right.
I tried to air professionalism here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your apology. Please avoid that in the future.
Please avoid being professional in the future. All right. If you want to know more about our internal squabbles, follow us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji. Hey, subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review. The best way to support the show, patreon.com/everythingelite, or go to manscaped.com. Use the promo code THISIS. You'll get 20% off and free shipping. Get the ultra smooth package. Shave your balls. All right. For Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.
Shave your balls.